Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the podcast where the host is speaking currently. He forgot he needed to come up with some sort of introduction, so here we are in an introductionless forum to discuss Buffalo Bills football. My name is Paul.
I'm Frank.
I'm Scott. That was very meta, Paul.
I know. It was funny, and it was not until I was about three sentences in, I'm like, okay, what was my intro again? Oh, wait, I did not come up with one, in fact. And then I thought, well, let me try to creatively do something like Frank will do and usually come up with comic gold, that, and then Scott usually has it pre-planned in the back of his head nicely. And instead, I just shot, I was shooting blanks on that one. You know.
And yet, here we are. The podcast has started, and everything is fine. If anyone
right.
turned off the podcast in the first 5 minutes because the intro was terrible, then you probably need to like lower your bar for podcasts.
Right.
Yeah, they weren't going to help anyway.
yeah, exactly.
And it's funny, and I think we do have a rule, it's kind of unstated, that the first minute should have nothing to do with anything. That has been one of our trademarks, actually. We should look and see if that can be something we can copyright, so if people do it, then we can...
Yeah, as an IP lawyer, I'm just going to let you know right now that that's not a thing.
All right. Well, it was worth a shot. We're all looking for easy money in life, so. Yep. So you're probably thinking to yourself, hey, why are you guys podcasting now in the middle of what would be considered the football dead zone sort of time? But, you know, sometimes a dead zone is a good time to dive into some of the issues you don't think about during the course of the season because things are too ramped up, or the immediate pre-draft hype, or the what's happening in free agency, or, hey, this player tripped and fell on a mat during practice and his career is over. You know, those are the types of things that can come up. And this is a good time to, you know, talk about some of the, you know, things that, you know, we can expect to see in the 2016 season or what, you know, is going to really affect the Bills' success. And also topics such as the one we will lead with, the stadium. Now, we have talked for years on and off about the stadium, and the first thought was being, well, they're not going to get one. The team's going to move to Los Angeles. That imminent threat is over for now. You know, not saying it couldn't arise again in 20 years, but with the Pegula ownership in place, not really a concern the team is going to move away. However, reports came out within the last 2 weeks that, in fact, other NFL owners and the NFL commissioner himself are pressuring the Pegulas to build a stadium in the more immediate future, which raises 8,000 interesting discussion points on, you know, who pays for it, when do they pay for it, where does the stadium go, how does this affect the team, and so on and so forth. So without, you know, delving into these topics too deeply, just kind of getting, you know, your guys' general impressions on, you know, what do you think the immediacy is in terms of the needs for a stadium, and you know how you think it affects positively, negatively the organization and the team. And I will start. I'm going to announce that I'm going to start with Scott. But if he's stumbling and Frank thinks he has better ideas, Frank will jump in and take over. But Scott, I'm going to go to you.
Okay. So we will talk about the stadium now. Yeah. I mean, it's tough because I feel like obviously, I'm of two minds about it. I don't think there's anything wrong with the Ralph in the sense that I have been there one time and I enjoyed myself post-renovation, I believe.
And, yeah, I was going to say, it was recently, so it's not like you're basing it on the 90s Ralph or something, back when it was rich.
Yeah. And I think it's not... There's two kind of discussions. Do we need a new stadium? No. Are we expected to have an NFL stadium every 30 years because we are an NFL team and that is what you do? That is what you do when you're an NFL franchise, is you make yourself a new stadium every 30 years, and that's kind of the informal bargain that you've made by becoming a part of the league and not being a, you know, not being an AFL team or something. You know, yes, you are part of that bargain and you are part of that thing. So, in some sense, I understand where the NFL is coming from to a certain degree, because I think all these other people have made their investments, and it is kind of, I think I would, you know, if we were all kind of chipping in to buy a car, and then, you know, we ended up, you know, everyone chipped in $10 and I only chipped in $5, I'd be a little annoyed, or everyone else would probably be a little annoyed at me that I wasn't contributing my fair share to the car. But at the same time, I also come from the point of, this isn't a car, this is billions of dollars we're talking about, and there's plenty of money to go around regardless. So I see it both ways.
And by the way, like, you're not actually the one chipping in the money. You're asking your family to chip in the money because
exactly. I'm asking my neighbors and friends. Yeah, exactly. To help me pay for this particular car. So there is that, but at the same time, ultimately, I've kind of resigned to it happening. I think the only thing left now is what the best deal that the Bills can get in terms of financing from the city and the state, and what the people of New York are going to have to pay. Because I think at this point, the Pegulas are going to. I don't know how long they can hold out and not build a stadium. I mean, they can't have the team taken away from them, I don't think. But
no.
Yeah, but it's kind of at some point it gets a little frosty in those owners' meetings if we're here in 2020 and there's no new stadium. You know, it's not even on the plans. Like, in fact, it's going to be 3 years before they could build it anyway. But regardless, like, it's not this. You committed to being part of the solution at some point by buying this team. So that's my thought.
Yeah, it's tough for some of the stuff that I think Scott says, because I'm not sure what the league could do. Because they've definitely just bought the team. It wouldn't be derelict. It wasn't part of the agreement that they had to somehow build a new stadium. That structure was clearly set so that the new owners could get out of the stadium easily after 7 years, which is still a couple of years away. So, I don't know. I mean, is there any... Maybe they just want to see some sort of planning getting involved where they're saying, okay, you know, is the downtown stadium feasible? And I know that they've talked about that already. Or how do we, you know, do we do a Citi Field or Yankee Stadium where we literally build the stadium in the old parking lot of the Ralph and then tear down the Ralph and make the parking lot there? You know, how are they going to approach that? I'll disagree a little with Scott. I think eventually a new stadium is needed. I mean, definitely when you go to other football stadiums, they're not all glorious, but the Ralph is outdated as compared to other ones, and I think there is some level of upkeep that goes beyond simply renovating. And you know, the thing is, though, a lot of those renovations that the NFL want are in the form of luxury boxes and business boxes and the high-end ticket client. And I think the problem is, Buffalo is a lot better off than it had been, but it's never going to be that city. It's never going to be Chicago, New York, LA in that way, or even Washington, where you're just going to have, you know, law firms upon law firms and lobbyists and all sorts of organizations that are going to
want... San Francisco with the wall of luxury boxes on one half of the stadium.
Right, you know, the tech industry, you know, and it's also not sort of like geographically isolated enough the way that some of the like places like Indianapolis is like the only city for 4 hours before and Buffalo's kind of up on Cleveland. It's not too far from
Cleveland, Pittsburgh,
Toronto, which doesn't really draw away from the NFL, but you know, it's not like you're getting a huge, you know, 4 hour radius of Bills fans. You're getting they've expanded a little west, but it's just never going to have the critical mass of people maybe that is required to sort of really rent out those boxes. And it also isn't going to be, you know, sort of the exemption, i.e. Lambeau Field in Green Bay, which is just going to forever, you know, be able to...
Permanently upgraded, permanently, it'll never move.
Yeah, they'll never get rid of Lambeau Field, and and that's all there is to it. That's an institution.
But that's the one exception, exactly.
Right, and so...
Right, and they don't have the type of footprint that Arrowhead has, where you could do just a full gutting and putting, you know, replacing things. The footprint in the Ralph Wilson area, just in terms of, you know, how that stadium is structured, does not lend itself as well to that sort of expansion. Sorry, Frank, didn't mean to jump in. But...
No, I think you're right. I was sort of rambling anyway. So I think that some of what the Bills needing to forestall this has been is that they sort of understand the market better than the NFL, and the NFL is just sort of like, well, no, you need to make this move, and if you're not going to be a sustainable market, then we need to just force that issue and move along. And, you know, how old was the Saint? How long had this? They're still paying the St. Louis Stadium, even though there's no team there anymore, and they're going to be for a while. And so, you know, I'm as a Bills fan and as somebody who is not in Western New York but cares about the economy of Western New York, I don't think there's any particular rush. The one good thing that I heard was that if you do, and this comes with success as well, but as you outprice the market, I know this happened at Fenway a little. As Fenway got better, a better and better Red Sox team, and the tickets got more and more expensive, the crowds got much less rowdy. Essentially, the Boston College group couldn't just sort of afford to walk over, and I'd hate to sort of, you know, look, you might end up on Deadspin a little bit less often with the fan group. If
you phrase that in the least judgmental way for alienating the fan base totally, to listen to our podcast.
It is. It's a totally terrible thing of me to suggest, but you know what? Like, you might price out some people who basically are there to drink first and football second.
Right, and it's funny you bring that aspect up simply because, you know, we don't mean to judge our own fan bases sometimes, but I think we can state the name of this bar as it no longer exists. But Frank used to attend Bill's game watchings at a bar in Washington, D.C. near the campus of his law school called McFadden's and decided, like, wow, I'm really enjoying the football games, but I forget that there are people in my fan base who are just complete tools. And all of them seem to have congregated at this place. And so Frank made the executive decision to walk an extra block and a half to the bar that we all ended up meeting at. We found, oh, here's where the non-Tool Bills fans are hanging out. And, you know, let's watch games together. And here we are, you know, 11 years later, still talking about Bills football. And, you know, and they're, what Frank says is a salient point, you know, especially is, you know, the sellouts are great, 50,000 season tickets are great, but, you know, what kind of element are you drawing to the games? Are you drawing, you know, real fans who are not going to base how good a time they had on how much they urinated themselves during the course of the game, or who, you know, can look at the football game and appreciate it for the spectacle that it is? So I think that's a very good point.
I am shocked at the elitism that's coming out of you two right now.
I knew I could count on Scott.
I am disgusted. disgusted from the two people who I held up as the least judgmental and most open and most, you know, Jesus. Kind of.
I was in the damn.
I hate drunk young people. What can I say? I hate people who have fun. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Right now, 22-year-old Paul is turning over in his grave because that Paul is dead. That Paul is no longer with us. The Paul who is espousing the views of Ralph Nader.
No, we got to let Scott give us our comeuppance, please. Go ahead.
This is very much, I remember literally not like 2 or 3 weeks ago reading, I think it was on Deadspin, it was the New York Yankees attempting to explain why they were cutting down on the secondary market for their tickets, and it was because, oh, well, we have a lot of fans who, well, they wouldn't want to be seated next to some of the people who might find their tickets on the secondary market, and we want to respect those fans' experience. And I'm kind of like, oh my God. Like, I mean, I am believe me, I went to college football games. I am well familiar with the insanity and the stupidity, and I've had friends kicked out of games. I've had friends not let into stadiums because they were too drunk getting into the game. And that's a part of the communal experience in my mind and I get that, you know,
but it's like sliding down the rail on the second level and falling into fans a part of the communal experience, or
you're if you're that drunk, you're going to do that anyway. It's just going to be out in the woods with a snowmobile, or it's going to be out on an ice fishing, you know.
I guess so. Yeah, I just don't want him falling on me like that. Like,
to defend Scott View, you put 70,000 people in any place that's not Joel Osteen Church, you're going to have some people in there who are no doubt going to be drunk and do stuff.
Bet there's somebody drunk at Joel Osteen Church.
There's definitely some ass play in the back.
Someone has some cocaine in a dollar bill. Someone's giving someone else.
Cocaine and Joel Osteen. There we go.
Someone is giving someone else a blowjob in the back of a car for a Joel Osteen jersey.
That's it. We did it. All right. Podcast over.
That's it.
You know, it's funny. Canceled. Just to give everyone insight into the planning of this podcast, we thought, well, our agenda's a little thin, but no doubt we might end off on a tangent. And I guarantee you, no one anticipated where exactly this was going to go.
The Joel Osteen
stadium talk started.
Allow me to bring it back to the stadium and just reiterate. Sure. I don't think it's a good idea to build a $1 billion stadium in order to price out like people. Okay. I'm just sort of saying that might be one of the things that comes along with the, you know.
Sure.
But it also prices out families. Like, so it's impossible really for a family of four to go to, you know, season tickets, let alone like you know, let alone season tickets, but like even a one football game is going to be in like the $300 range for a family of four, I would assume, by the time you park, get four tickets, and eat something and buy a souvenir. You know, that's a $300 day. So,
I agree with you, Frank, too. As much as we, you know, kind of, you know, joked about the elitism here, I recognize, especially in this economy in Buffalo, which has improved rapidly, but still you're not looking at an extremely high median salary. And, you know, you can't assume that everyone who does make a lot of money is a drunken reveler who, you know, is busy flinging feces at monkeys just for like these, a lot of them are people who are working very hard and are just in an industry or an economy that doesn't allow them to make a ton of money. And so why build a stadium designed around luxury boxes?
Right.
Okay. I have a question then. So are we all agreed then that the Bills will build another stadium? Like, that's going to happen? I mean, I guess it's kind of obvious at this point.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, let's 7 years down the road, it's going to be, you know, 2023, and the stadium will be 50 years old at that point.
Yeah, and
that's
I think that's
a century of a stadium. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, that must have been part of the discussions with the ownership groups, that at some point you're going to have to build a stadium. And in Buffalo, part of the discussions with the city is like, you know, Buffalo or the surrounding area is going to have to build a new stadium. And the question is just whether that needs to be part of downtown Buffalo, whether it needs to be maybe moved out of Erie County. It's in Erie County, right? Orchard Park. Like, it might, maybe another county steps up and says, okay, I forget which county, like Batavia is in, which is halfway between Buffalo and Rochester. And it's like, well, it's a mild inconvenience to Toronto, you know, Canadians crossing the border, but here we go. Or, I don't know, maybe that's part of the international step up as you go build the stadium in Fort Erie and suddenly the traffic reverses, you know. But somebody will step up. They'll want the business of the NFL and they'll get their taxpayers to agree. And so,
yeah, and I, you know, circling with my opinion on this aspect, and I literally wrote the sentence before Frank even started speaking, but it ties into exactly what he said. Buffalo's economic revitalization has largely been based on small businesses and not behemoth organizations shelling out for luxury suites, or the type of organization that would shell out for luxury suites. You have M&T Bank, you have the university education system, you have a few other large employers, but, you know, the success of the, you know, the Bills is largely based on, you know, people like me, people like you, and then aside from us elitists, you know, other hardworking people who can come to the stadium. And then, you know, the whole idea behind the new stadium, which is the elephant in the room, and you can watch John Oliver on last week tonight, whatever it's called, talking about, you know, stadiums. And I think this is a good time to blame Scott for things because, you know, the whole taxpayer-funded stadium in full thing, let's date that back to Turner Field and the Atlanta Braves baseball team, American baseball. Yeah. I don't know if there's European baseball. I guess you would call that cricket. But
it's Korean baseball.
Korean baseball, Japanese. Yeah. So American baseball, that's what's kind of led to this taxpayer-funded stadium mess. So it'll be interesting to see.
That was an Olympic stadium at the same time. It's not the first time that somebody paid for money for Olympics out of public money.
Right, which they and that's turned out really well for Greece, you know, and in that area.
That's why the Olympics are going to be in Kazakhstan in 2 years.
That's another discussion for another podcast, but that's really interesting, too, looking at all these wonderful Olympic stadiums and villages and everything that's built only to fall into disrepair. And Buffalo has hosted something called the World University Games in 1993 that was like the Olympics Junior. It was actually a big deal at the time. And they built these venues, which then fell into states of disrepair. Thankfully, not into the large scale that we've seen for some Olympic sites, but, you know, Turner Field in Atlanta is a great example of that. Like, it's being replaced, and it is, it didn't even make it 20 years. Made it just under 20 years old for that stadium. So, you know, hopefully city planners do a better job going forward. But, you know, and one thing I want to contribute to the discussion, too, on the location is, you know, Frank mentioned Batavia and Genesee County. Hey, and he was doing it, you know, randomly is one location. I think one of the keys is because 20% of the Bills fan base comes from over the Canadian border to watch games, I think you want to make sure that stadium's closer to, you know, the border. So I would say put it in Niagara County, somewhere in Niagara Falls where there's plenty of dead land you can probably find a space for, however much of that land is infected with radiation and no doubt people would die on the way back from games. So that's an issue. But if you're going to put it, I have one issue with the downtown stadium, Well, actually two, and those are the two cities I've been to where I've walked by a downtown stadium. One, well, Frank mentioned both. You mentioned the one in Indianapolis, and he also mentioned the one in, we also talked about Cleveland briefly. I love both of those cities on my trips there. I've enjoyed myself. I've enjoyed the downtown areas. But unless it's a game day, and the times I was around those cities was not NFL game day, it's just a giant, giant thing taking up space in the middle of your city going unused for all but 8 days out of the year. If you can make it some sort of complex where you have things going on in that area 50 days a year maybe, then I'm all about it. But go ahead.
That's why, well, I mean, like Lucas Oil does host the Big Ten Championship, and I think they host
They have the Final Four every couple of years.
Right. So they've been able to turn it into something bigger, which I think is why they ended up with a Super Bowl. And a place like Buffalo, like even if you build a new stadium, they're never going to have a Super Bowl in Western New York. Like it would absolutely it's sort of like having the Olympics. It would completely throttle the economy in a way. And so
you would open you have to have open like at least I would say 15 additional hotels in the surrounding area, which would then go bankrupt shortly after the Super Bowl.
Right, which would never get used again. Yeah. And so I think there's that. You look at other stuff too, and like you know the Rochester, New York, like that's the biggest employer there is the University of Rochester. Like, and the Kodak's not there, Bausch & Lomb's not really there anymore. What would have happened if they hadn't completely, you know, corruptly like stolen all this money when they were building the ferry to Toronto? Like, if they had managed that correctly, at this point, when you're talking about, well, you need to move the stadium, you could say, well, we could just triple the ferry carryover. And you know, bus people forth and back and forth from Toronto, like that might actually would have been a you know a potentially good revenue stream, but they sort of botched that on top of you know the regular sad economic state that is the Rust Belt of America these days. So yes, I definitely see what you're saying with regards to Canucks needing to go to the games.
So then indoor stadium then?
I think they will. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think Buffalo's gotten over the... Look, first of all, they haven't built a team that's been good in the snow in 25 years. Like, so... like they have never managed... Right, they've never... Like, they haven't had a hardy quarterback that can deliver the ball in cold weather. They've just sort of enabled Tom Brady to, like, also deliver the ball well in cold weather. So I think that there's a whole, like, getting over that. And I think there have been games where, like, towards the end of the season when your shitty team is there, nobody wants to go sit in the freezing cold rain. Yep. So, you know, you can definitely build something like Lucas Oil that has a retractable roof. I think that's probably the way you'd end up going. And you could have... So I guess if you wanted to have a snow day, you could. But, you know, otherwise, why just sit in the cold, right?
Like, I think the new stadium in Minneapolis is also at least retractable, if not fully indoors.
Right.
Yep. All right. Okay. Well, it's funny. Ooh, I'm starting to get a Zool. Hopefully that's not me. This is what happens when you get some business minds together. I think we should probably finish talking about business and move on to the business of football. So let's go into the Bills. Specifically, as a team, as an organization, what we can expect to see. We've got the draft coming up. We've just finished first-tier free agency. What I want to assess with you guys, and even though I started with Scott last time, I think I might start with Scott this time simply because Frank and I overwhelmed him in discussion. In the last minute or two.
No, I just didn't want to talk.
Okay, no, that's it's all right. So I'll let whoever jump in. But
we're Western New York.
Oh, it's Frank. Frank.
He's the Zooler. So now we're definitely going to start with Scott because Frank will probably want to do the quick log off, log on thing. Maybe. Oh yeah, he's gone. Frank has left us. We'll start here with you, Scott. When we look at the first tier of free agency, the first wave, of free agency is over. The Bills are going to have to build and make up for the absences on their roster and who they've lost in free agency through second-tier free agency and through the draft. In your assessment, when you look at the positions, when you look at the roster, where do you think the holes are that the Bills need to address? And a second part of that, are those holes better addressed through the second wave of free agency or through the draft? Or does it matter?
So, there's definitely a couple holes that are on the Bills right now, and I'm sure Frank will get into these too. Obviously you can talk about maybe number two or number three wide receiver. You can talk about tackle, maybe guard. You can talk about on the offensive line. You can talk about A backup quarterback, kind of at minimum, maybe. You can talk about defensive tackle, or at least, you know, kind of an elephant end kind of role, perhaps. And then also at least one linebacker, probably two, you know, that you really want to be able to go into the season having. At least, now again, you're not going to be able to get starters at all those positions. But I think at the same time, for me, the biggest priority of those, I think that Rex can find substandard talent, or at least NFL average talent, and turn them into good linebackers in his system. I think that's what his whole system is predicated on. It's being able to take smart but not particularly physically brilliant players and turn them into above average talents by putting them into a scheme that maximizes the confusion and maximizes the disruption to the offense in a mental kind of state. And you're not relying on essentially what we had last year, which was or what we had 2 years ago, which was basically four incredible physical talents just basically beating their man one-on-one. So in that sense, to my mind, even though, you know, we've lost Bradham and he was such a big part of the defense 2 years ago, I think for me, I'd rather spend your first-round draft pick on a tackle if there's a good one available. And again, maybe I'm biased. I've always been an offensive line guy. And something, especially given our attempts to run the ball and our reliance on McCoy and Taylor to run the ball for the offense year. I think if someone like Taylor Decker is available in the first round, I think that's someone that you really have to look at. Someone like Jack Conklin, also from Michigan State. I think tackle. I understand Chantrell is doing better with his Crohn's disease, and good luck to him. I hope he, you know, is obviously healthy and able to contribute on the NFL and has a successful career. But I'm just basing my evaluation on the need for talent at tackle based simply off of, like, we've seen him good, and it's not that good. Like, at his best, he was one of the worst tackles in the league. And, you know, that's certainly better than all the guys who ever play NFL tackle right now live on this world, but it's not good enough for this team the way we're built right now. So for me, I go offensive tackle first round. And then if you want to talk about a linebacker or somebody in the second or third round, I that makes sense. Or getting someone in kind of now your second-tier free agents, I think that would be an appropriate place to address more of those defensive parts because, again, I think Rex can use average players to basically put and use his scheme to make the best out of average players on defense, and so the offense needs a lot more talent, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Well thought out. Frank, what are your thoughts? Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in.
No, you're good. You're good. Do I sound better?
You sound beautiful.
Sound wonderful. Zool-free.
Zool-free. Scott makes a lot of sense. I think there's a lot of sense in leveraging what your coach does well and picking talent where perhaps you need talent to succeed. I just don't know, and it might be a question for me about I don't know the draft class well enough as to who is going to be available in the first round and who's going to be available in the second round. I think they're going to take a quarterback. I think that's all but certain. It might be a second or third round quarterback, but I think that they are looking for a cheap option for when EJ Manuel eventually leaves and stops costing them money. And I think that at the top of the draft, I think it's the same positions. I think it's linebacker. I think it's tackle. I think defensive end even. You might want some young talent there or tackle. I mean, you don't really know how Kyle Williams is going to show up this year or not, how well he's going to play between injuries and age. He's getting to a point where you got to think about him. What else? I mean, wide receiver, right? Like, I mean, we're going to throw our hat in the ring maybe again with Percy Harvin, it sounds like, but ultimately...
Is that insane? I'm sorry. Can I stop real quick? How are we putting more money on Harvin? Can we talk about that quick?
If he comes back for the veteran minimum, then okay, whatever. But, like, if it's going to be, like, we're competing with teams and throwing millions of dollars again, like, I don't know. Like, there's no money for that, first of all. Like, that's the first thing. Like, there is no money on the team to go and sign a good, talented guy like that. So for me, it doesn't make as much sense. It's actually kind of why I'd like to see maybe, depending on the wide receiver, you know, you could maybe take one in the first round if the talent's there. Everything I've looked at doesn't seem to really indicate that there's like a first round worthy wide receiver this year.
It's thin on wide receivers this year, I think.
Yeah, then in that case, I think even though that might be the thing that would help the offense the most, is to have a solid number two. I think then you go with linebacker, defensive end, or tackle, lineman, really. I think that's the kind of place that we're going to be looking at in the draft. Not yeah. Noah Spence. And Noah Spence plays offensive linebacker and defensive end, and Yahoo says their Bills are going to take him, and I don't trust anybody that does more than one position anymore.
And I think Frank
offensive
just...
Offensive linebacker.
Yes, offensive linebacker, my favorite.
Yeah, outside linebacker. Wow. The guy above him is the offensive tackle, Jack Conklin.
Yeah, people talk about how Rex is a revolutionary to come up with the first offensive linebacker in football history. Football history, mind you, not just NFL history. Shows you how forward thinking he is. Oops. I wonder what that position would entail, too.
Does he play on offense or does he just line up in the backfield on defense? Because I feel like that's an unfair advantage.
Yeah, he could just be, you know, when we say offensive linebacker, he could just be a regular linebacker, but who's always, you know, shouting out epithets.
Super racist. Yes.
Super racist, super, you know, xenophobic, just, you know, hates everyone. So,
in other words, just a linebacker, basically.
There. Yes, a linebacker. And one thing, you know, Frank brought up, well, one thing Scott brought up, which would be a complete digression for me, so I'll just mention it, but I like how I mentioned, like, how Sean Trowell, when he was, you know, starting at tackle, was ranked one of the worst in the league. And we have, you know, I think one of the things which I always see in comment sections of sites and so forth, which makes me cringe, are people judging how successful a draft pick is based on how many games they've started. I mean, that just says more about the lack of talent that a team has that they plug in a guy than it does, you know, how good that player is. I always think of former Bills receiver Josh Reed. 8 full seasons with the team, started 52 games. Seems like that would be a decent football player. But it goes more to the fact that the Bills couldn't really get a decent wide receiver, you know, a decent number two wide receiver during the course of that time. You know, they had Molds at the first half, and they had Evans toward the back half, and then he was being plugged into number two roles that he wasn't really suited for. His most useful was when he was a number three behind Molds and Price. But again, bit of a digression there, but that's my note to everyone.
It's a very relevant point, though, Paul, because at the same time, if you look, that's the thing, like, is your player who's cut by your team picked up by any other teams? Yep. The answer is no. That guy is probably not a real NFL player. He's just a guy that you found who could play for you because you have no other talent. Whereas now, we've had 6 free agents leave in the offseason, and they've all signed with other teams. That's what happens when you actually have talent on your team, is other people are interested in signing. So.
It's great. You know, and it's funny, and I mentioned Josh Reed not even thinking about that part of it, but you look at his Wikipedia page, if you want, Buffalo Bills, 2002 to 2009. Then he has San Diego Chargers, 2010, with the dreaded asterisk next to it, which means offseason and or practice squad member only. He did not make the team. And around that same era was a Bills receiver named Bobby Shaw, whose career you can look at and say, oh, yeah, he was at the Bills in 3 in 2004, and then he signed with the Chargers and never played a game with the Chargers. He was just he was done. So whereas now the guys the Bills are letting go, many of them are ending up on other teams. So random interesting digression. But back to the topic at hand. Frank said something which I'll confess to as well. I don't know this draft class well enough to know exactly whether I would want to fill some of these holes with second wave free agents or with people in the draft. I do, you know, when Scott says he wants to draft a good tackle, I take Scott's word for it. And let's face it, that is a need. You do have Sean Trowell.
Well, you qualify it as a good tackle, then yes, of course I agree. I just don't know if there is one.
Right.
I think that's the thing. For me, if you get Conklin or Decker, and both of those guys are guys who are should be at least in play around where we are, it could be they could be gone a pick or two before. And in that case, then fine, take a linebacker or take a defensive end. But, yeah, I think those guys are first-round talents, I would say, and deserve to be picked with a first-round pick. And some guys, yeah, exactly, as opposed to some years where you're just reaching out of need. I don't think the Bills are in a position where they need to do that, which is good.
Right, and it's good that they're not in such desperation mode. And I think another reason tackle would be a good idea no matter where they get is because we're talking about right tackle. Well, yeah, they've got Glenn, and we're assuming they're going to re-sign him to a long-term extension, but remember, they franchised Jarvis Byrd a few years back and then lost him anyway in the long term. They just had him that one extra season. So you could be looking at, you know, you might have the best intents of keeping Glenn on long term, but it might not happen. So, you know, I think that's a need, and I would want to see that plugged through the draft. It's difficult to – I have no problem finding a depth tackle, you know, a third tackle, fourth tackle through the second wave draft. I don't want that those positions filled exclusively through those means. So I think what Scott said about Rex being able to turn average linebackers into good players in his system, I think that's a very valid point. I think you can probably find those someone in that second wave of free agency who can do that and fill that role okay just based on the type of defense Rex runs. We did talk about Percy Harvin briefly. They do need... I like Robert Woods as a number three receiver. I think he can do damage there, and I think, honestly, I think his numbers as a number three receiver could be better than his numbers as a number two receiver, because I think the offense as a whole will be more productive. They won't have all the three and outs they had this season, where I think they were number one or two in the league in three and outs. They'll be able to keep on the field more. That's just going to naturally give him more opportunities for catches and when they're going three and out. So even though we talked about the Bills' offensive improvement there, there's still a lot of room to improve. And as Scott mentioned, they are trying to build a run-first team, and then allowing Tyrod to take shots downfield, which we saw works, you know, in pieces during the 2015 season. But the problem, it seemed to be like, oh, it was in the first half of games, you know, the Kansas City game, Miami game, well, what the second Miami game, though they won both of those anyway. You know, I'd like to see that consistently throughout the course of a game, recognizing that a game's going to have an ebb and flow to it, and you're not going to be firing on all cylinders from the beginning to the end in most football games, no matter whether you're the best team or the worst team. So I'm veering off point a little bit, but yeah, I think we need some, as fans, we want to see the team add a wide receiver. We do want to see a quarterback. I'm not necessarily sold that it has to be rounds 1 to 3. I don't mind rounds 2 and 3. I'm okay with that. Round 1 I don't like simply because one is the needs in other areas, and two, just the expectation that's on a round 1 quarterback. If we were fans of the Washington football team, we could talk about Kirk Cousins' success relative to the fact that he didn't have the pressure on him of, you know, the now Cleveland Browns, Robert Griffin III, in that role, because he came out as a fourth-round pick that same draft. He got some attention paid to him, but not much, and so lower expectations. There's a lot of pressure put on first-round picks, especially ones who are expected to sit on the bench for a couple seasons, because as fans, the second, you know, Tyrod Taylor throws the ball off a guy's fingertips, it's going to be like, ah, bring in this other guy. And I'm not crazy about that. And last area I wanted to mention was the depth at cornerback. You know, they've lost Liotis. You know, they lost Ron Brooks. They've lost them all to the Eagles. I'm sure Ken Irvin, Marlon Kerner, they're all playing for the Eagles now. I know they've been retired for 10 years, but in my mind,
still, Jim Schwartz has them as coaches or something.
Yeah. Yes. So, regardless, I think they do need to build some depth at cornerback, because in the pass-happy league, we all like Stephon Gilmore. We all like Ronald Darby. I shouldn't say we all like them, but they're good players. Nickell Roby is a guy who can work well in the Ryan system, as we saw with his season under Mike Pettine. So, you know, with all of that in play, and mind you, we're going to have some continuity for the first time ever. We're going to have back-to-back seasons with the same defensive coordinator for the first time in the 2010s. Think about how ridiculous that is. So, you know, that's a plus there. So we'll kind of see how it goes. But I think, you know, that's my opinion on how they should fill some of these holes. Do you want to move on to the next topic? Anything more you want to talk about on holes to fill?
That's the thing. I'm looking at the free agent class right now. I mean, if you look at the people who are available, it's like left tackle, you got William Beatty from the Giants, not someone I remember being someone who's super valuable. Obviously, again, if they were super valuable, they wouldn't be free agents. Someone would have signed them by now. Jari Evans is some talent at guard. That might actually be someone we might take a look at if he's still available. But if you're looking at linebackers, you know, Curtis Lofton, apparently now a linebacker, not a center fielder. Donald Butler, again, that seems like someone who should be playing another sport. Jason Hatcher, Chris Clemens, I guess, probably still has some tread left on the tires. Maybe he might be able to get you a season or two out of him. But there's not. I think there's some guys probably further down the list here that we can look at for people who can maybe still have some value added in a Rex Ryan defense. Regardless, it's not going to be nothing earth shattering probably happening right now on the free agent market. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick available, Frank. He's probably available for backup money, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that he is. I mean, maybe, I guess things just fell through with the Jets, but he definitely had a good year, quote-unquote.
He wants to get paid $15 million a year, and no one wants to pay him that.
No? Yeah, I don't want to pay him that. I'm over Fitz. He's now no longer am I enamored of him. So, and I don't know if I was ever enamored of him more right. so than I was enamored of the idea of him. So, what I'm trying to say is balls to him.
Yeah, it's funny. I was, you know, we were all talking about how Fitz and Gailey are probably going to be a playoff team. All they have to do is build a decimated Bills defense on the last week of the regular season, and lo and behold, inside the 10-yard line in the fourth quarter.
They needed help, too. Or they, like, even if they had lost that game, like, I think there was another team that had to lose, too, right? Was it the Steelers?
No, the Jets were winning. They were in.
They were winning.
Exactly. They were. No, that's what I mean. They needed someone. If the Steelers lost too, then the Jets were still going to be in.
Oh, yep, I see. They were up like
they needed help to fall out. Exactly, and correct. They got everything. Everything broke the wrong way for them, and they were a terrible team in Noah Mike's.
Including them, they also broke the wrong way for them.
Yeah.
Yep. Bad 10 and 6 teams. They do exist, and the Bills probably have had some bad 10 and 6 teams in their day as well. Just briefly on the free agency too. This was just more of a point of interest, not a big discussion topic. Craig Urbick, you know, Marquise Gray, now also to the Dolphins, joining Mario Williams, joining Kiko Alonso. We also know that the Eagles roster, I believe, has four recent former Bills on it at this point. Kind of interesting. It goes to the point that Frank made earlier about guys the Bills are cutting loose tend to, and I think it was Frank, are now landing with other squads. And also kind of says, does this guy make you think maybe the Bills are going to be a few steps ahead of the Dolphins again this season, and that they're signing Bills cast-offs, recognizing that Mario Williams is not a typical cast-off and would not surprise any of the three of us, I don't think, if he made a Pro Bowl again this year?
That's the thing. I can never really worry about the Dolphins as long as they have Tannehill. I just don't. Yeah. Like, I mean, they might be better than us for, like, one particular season, but it's not going to turn into a situation where it's like Tom Brady, where it's like, well, that's it. Now they've beaten us. Like, they've put all the pieces together, and we're just going to be behind them for the next 5 years. Like, I don't feel like the Dolphins are anywhere near that kind of level of talent. So they might very well finish one game better than us this season, but I could just as easily see them being behind us or, you know, tied with us. So I'm not concerned by any moves that they make or don't make, honestly.
Frank, any thoughts on the Gray and Urbick additions of the Dolphins?
No.
Nope. Yep. All right, that covers that topic in full, and I agree fully with Scott's point, so we won't harp on that. And one thing that occurred to me with, and I can kind of start this topic of conversation, Bills who are facing make-or-break seasons and how their development will affect the team's success. And I wrote this sentence with one player in mind that I'll mention off the bat, and that was Preston Brown. Now, we did mention earlier that Rex Ryan can take average linebackers and make them fit fine in his system. But his system does require at least one really good linebacker to make things flow. Last year, that guy was supposed to be Preston Brown, and lo and behold, by the end of the season, it was Manny Lawson who was calling plays because Preston, who is an intelligent player by all accounts, was still in over his head trying to make calls. Now, it could be simplified this year when they completely remove all the Schwartz elements of the defense, just go to the talents of the players and see how they work within the Pettin system. At the same time, they do need at least one really good linebacker. He had at least that when he was in New York. That helped that defense be successful. So when I think of Bills who are, you know, potentially, you know, how they develop will help the team's success, do we see Preston Brown? Will it be considered a sophomore slump that he had last year and he will emerge as a very good player? Or did he just happen to have a really good rookie season and a really, really good defense, and as a result, we'll see how that picks up. So, you know, that's my take. Frank, I wanted to go to you next. What do you when you think of Bills who really are, you know, guys who could determine, you know, how the 2016 season goes based on their performance, and that their performance could go one way or the other. It's not super predictable. Like, we expect LeSean McCoy to have a great season unless he's injured. You know, what Bill or Bills do you think of? Frank is.
We've
very
bored him.
Quiet on this point.
We've bored him out of his mind.
Frank has fallen asleep at the wheel here.
Sorry. No, you guys froze for a second, and I was like trying. I didn't. I thought you asked Scott, and okay.
That's all right. We'll replay the question here. live.
All right, I have one, and then I'll, and then go to Frank, and then we'll come back to me again because I have two.
All right.
So my Bill who probably needs to have a make or break season this year for me, I feel like it's a little bit Robert Woods, because I feel like he can be the number two receiver on this team. I feel like he's good enough. I feel like I kind of wish we almost had a mini camp now to see what Robert Woods looked like healthy. And then put him through his routes, put him out on their field with Sammy and with Tyrod, and have them kind of get some chemistry together, because I really feel like he's never gotten – he was a good receiver for us for a while, and then we brought Harvin in just kind of like – because Rex Ryan likes Percy Harvin, I think, mostly. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of – when Woods got hurt, and then everyone was kind of like, well, we need a number two. And Robert Woods was a second or third round pick for us. He had plenty of balls that he caught for us before we had Sammy, or at least in that – you know, when EJ was a quarterback, and obviously EJ is not the best quarterback, and it's difficult to evaluate a receiver that poorly. So I kind of think of Robert Woods as someone who you know, if he can do what he can do, he can perform the way I think he can at the top of his abilities. He can be a real player on this team, be a solid number two, and then we can focus our errors on efforts. And if he's not, then, unfortunately, then we do kind of have to go back to the drawing board a little bit and get either a temporary solution, and I say temporary because I hope Percy Harjan doesn't get injured again, but it seems like that's going to happen regardless.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
or just decides he doesn't want to play football.
Exactly.
I still don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't think anyone does. So yeah. It's kind of, for me, we do that, or you go out and you have to spend another second around third round pick for a guy who you don't really know how they're going to end up playing in the NFL. So for me, I'll start with Robert Woods. But I do have someone else in mind, so we're going to go to Frank. But I want to hear his thoughts, unless he steals him.
I thought about stealing yours. but I'm just going to go with the obvious one instead. It's Tyrod Taylor.
Like, okay.
The entire engine of the football team is him, and if it's not him, then
there's that too. Yeah.
Then you know what? Like, the whole thing falls apart. If it's not him, and he doesn't. If he has the same year that he had last year, like, I can't tell if that's worse or better than him being terrible. It's probably better slightly, because it still would be the most stable quarterback play in the last 15 years, but it doesn't exactly propel you forward. I guess if he's healthy for all 16 games, that's probably enough, right? Like, it's just a matter of, like, if we had two more games of Tyrod Taylor instead of the 14 we had, well, they're almost certainly a playoff team. So I don't know. For me, it's Tyrod Taylor, though, because if he takes a step back, then the whole thing falls apart. He needs to have the make or break year. He needs to have the faith that, or the faith that has been put into it. Not even faith. Like, they're just getting a super cheap quarterback, like a ridiculously cheap quarterback for how well he plays. But he has to show something, so that when the offensive coordinator Greg Roman does get a head coaching job next year or the following year, he's going to be the bridge to whatever the next part of the team is. Because if we have to restart again with quarterback, then you've basically wasted your time with LeSean McCoy. You've probably wasted your time with the tight end
Charles Clay.
And there's a good chance that Sammy Watkins becomes the next Eric Moulds and or Lee Evans, and or name another great wide receiver that just sort of basically was wasting his time on the Bills. You know, so for me, like, the make or break guy is the make or break guy for the team, and it's Taylor. There's just, to me, that's just him.
I don't think anyone would disagree that Tyrod has to have a good season. I mean, I think that's pretty clear.
Right. And if he doesn't have a good season, then it's his walk year, and they're not going to pay him, and he's gone. So
not the end of the world either way. And Paul said Preston Brown. The only other one I wanted to throw out briefly was T.U. Kuruvilla. I don't know if you guys...
Oh, I love me some Kuruvilla.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, he's had good seasons for us. He's had bad seasons. You know, again, his day job, politician from Kerala, India. But he also, you know, subs in a linebacker in some of the dime packages. You know, he could be a pass rusher on third down, too. But, you know, he came out of... What college was it in here? I thought I saw the college ham.
He was... he represents Katha Mangalam, right?
Katha Mangalam, yeah. U, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's what it was. It was civil engineering is what he studied. And so, you know, I think if he can really turn it on, you know, you guys forget, just a couple years ago, considering his humanitarian activities and contribution to society, Southeastern University in London gave him an honorary doctorate. So
yeah,
that's a kind of guy who's got some talent, and if he can really turn it on, I feel like that's going to really help the defense. I think he's a Rex Ryan guy. I mean, you worry about his age. He's born in 1936, yeah, so he's getting up there. 80.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like it's...
Well, and one thing we talk about all the time, too, which is not to forget, we talk about the importance of whether or not, you know, character is, in fact, a big deal. And here you're looking at a guy, you know, we found some misappropriations in the land dealings in which he and his family were involved. You know, that becomes kind of a, does that become a distraction when they're thinking, you know, he's really great, he could get 10 sacks in that situational pass rusher role, but do I have to worry that he is screwing people in real estate right now? You know, is that might be in the back of your head as a teammate of Kuruvilla's.
Absolutely.
I think that lends to why it's such an important year for him. And the other thing is, Syriac Orthodox Church, is he a system guy? Is he just a guy that, like, thrived, another one of these great, you know, Syriac guys who sort of looks good at that level and then comes up to the pros? And, you know, no disrespect to SOC, but come on. I mean, how many times are we going to get fooled?
It's true. I mean, if we had a list of every guy who was in the Syriac Orthodox Church who failed at the NFL, I mean...
The list is pretty long. Yeah.
The list is pretty long, especially if you type Hugh Kuruvilla's name in huge font. Like, that would be... a ton of pages there, you know, that would inevitably take up. So
yeah.
Anyway, so that's a good topic though, Paul. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's Thank you. Great topic. Yeah, and I appreciate, you know, Scott making sure we covered our bases here. So
yep.
Good. And speaking of career-ending things, Scott Chandler. Rumor has it, meaning reporting by reliable sources, has that due to his latest surgery, that might be it for his NFL career. It's kind of, to me, like a Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed life career, in that he was never nearly remotely as good as those players. He might be remembered for having, you know, a pretty decent NFL career when with the Buffalo Bills, and then he goes on for one nondescript season with a rival, and then his career ends.
I was going to say, like, what are the things that Scott Chandler has in common with Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed? Played for the Bills.
Yep. Had one nondescript year with a rival, and then his career ended. So we're not sure, you know, We know Frank's opinion on Scott Chandler. He was, he was what he was, I think, is what we would say about him. The Bills have certainly had many, many, many worse tight ends. I think he, in a lot of ways, epitomizes, like, what the Bills regard as good at tight end and why they haven't been successful at that position in years. But that said, he did have some positive moments with the team. Had some highlights. So if his career is over, you know, I'll try.
His career was not a complete failure.
Right.
I have some brief thoughts while Frank finishes his home improvement project he's working on.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm done with that now.
But, I mean, that is kind of the interesting point, though, Paul, is that does someone like Scott Chandler set you back in the sense that he's never going to be good enough to be on a – that's the thing. Like, it's fundamentally a team game. Yeah. So – could a team like last year's Denver Broncos have Scott Chandler on that team and win? Sure. But I feel like he's almost going to be more of, like, he's always the guy you're waiting to have, like, well, if we just get a little more out of Chandler, like, if he just learns how to catch more passes or, you know, learns how to block one guy, like, he could really be a good player for us. And so you keep him on your roster and you expect more out of him than he ever gives you. In that sense, I'm not sure you wonder if he hurt more than he helped while he was here. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say he did. Like, my opinion is exactly that. Like, they never bothered to upgrade that position, and that you probably could have done better with worse quarterbacks if you had. And not, I don't know, like, if he's the difference maker between a playoff Bills team and a non-playoff Bills team, but he wasn't helping the team, and he sucked pretty much. He was a bad tight end, and literally kept his job because it was probably easier to keep him than it was to find somebody better.
Yep, and that's to go to Frank's point, just so we don't end the Chandler discussion on such a downer note, let's remember that he was a cast-off of, I believe, Dallas and some other organizations who chose not to keep him, and then the Bills turned him into, you know, an adequate, you know, person. I like to think of him as the Jeff Jarrett for those professional wrestling fans of professional football. Like, he was never really a useful guy, and then the WCW was like, you know what, we're going to turn him into a champion, a world champion, and then he'll just say, you know, screw you, WWE. Look it, I'm the world champion now. And WWE will say, oh, you're a world champion for that organization, so good for you, I guess.
Right.
So that can kind of be the approach on
Scott. He was okay in DX when there was, like, 10 other guys in DX.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, he was never going to carry it himself.
No, yeah. And that's how we feel about Scott Chandler in the tight end position.
Right.
I have on the agenda draft previews, but I don't know, guys. I'm thinking we'll probably have one more podcast before the draft, which is still 4 weeks away.
Yeah.
We'll probably discuss it then a little more in depth. And if we do it now, 52 minutes or so into the podcast, we might get off topic a little bit. Do we want to go with the draft preview discussion? I leave it open to you gentlemen.
Well, as I stated earlier, I don't really know many of the prospects yet, so I could spend the next month pretending like I will bother to look up any of them, and then we could discuss it.
I will probably go ahead and say that we can postpone it, and I think we could probably think of another topic to run out the next 8 minutes here.
Yeah, because we have to fulfill an hour per
kind. Right.
Yeah, that is what the requirement says. I don't know if you guys read that regulation the other day, but it says we have to do it for an hour. So
yeah.
Okay,
we could do. Sorry, go ahead, Frank.
Oh,
I
was
going to suggest, like, around the NFL, talking about Colin Kaepernick meeting with the Broncos, things of that nature, Robert Griffin signing, or we could do whatever Frank was about to suggest.
I was going to ask, what's the last wrestling match you remember watching in earnest? Because you had mentioned Jeff Jarrett, yeah. And I was just thinking, WrestleMania is tomorrow.
Yeah.
I found, because it's getting a lot of play in the regular press, like, because it's a... I don't know why, but, like, I guess people are surprised that we're still, like, a WrestleMania culture. But
they were just on CBS Sunday Morning the other day, and they're selling out where they're going to be in Dallas. That's going to be 100,000 people that are going to be there watching WrestleMania. And
yeah.
A terrible WrestleMania by all accounts, too. Again, I have not watched professional wrestling regularly in many, many years. Hilariously, I will occasionally watch videos online of people commentating on current wrestling because I find that entertaining. But the last match I watched in earnest, like the last time I sat down and watched a wrestling match and thought, I'm kind of interested in how this will turn out. I'm probably going to have to go back to the late 1990s when I'd say Goldberg Hogan at the Georgia Dome. On it was just WCW Monday Nitro. I was really interested in that match, which was done that day. Now, I did have Raw on about 2 months ago, and I think I watched a good match between a group called New Day and Chris Jericho and AJ Styles on the other end, which I looked up.
Chris Jericho's still wrestling.
Yeah, I looked up at my phone a few times during the course of that match and actually watched pieces of it for a minute plus, but I wouldn't say I watched that in earnest. So, Scott, how far back do you have to go?
So it's actually kind of funny for me because I, growing up in Connecticut, in literally the cradle of the WWE, like my cousin saw, when he was like 10 or 11, he saw Hulk Hogan at the freaking supermarket. He snapped a picture of him, Hogan, you know, he put it online, Hogan sued him later. There's a whole big thing. I don't want to get into it, but, but despite that, I actually wasn't a big wrestling guy. I feel like I remember watching, I feel like the only time that I ever remember watching wrestling was when I was probably about 9 and I was in like elementary school and we went over to some kid's house afterwards and he was watching wrestling and I was into it for like 5 minutes and I remember Jake the Snake and being into him. And
oh yeah.
That was about it.
Good call.
That was literally, that's my wrestling. That's my wrestling fandom. And
see, now you should go watch Beyond the Mat and find out what happened to Jake the Snake because it doesn't end well.
I listen to the Corolla podcast sometimes, and he's had Diamond Dallas Page come on and talk about like his incredible like life story and how he ended up basically not being able to walk and he was on drugs and then he got into yoga and then he got himself in a better situation so that then he could eventually reach out to Jake the Snake, I think, who was equally not doing well, and then eventually try to like bring him in. And I forget how the story ended, but yeah, it was. I mean, everybody dies when you wrestle. Like Hulk Hogan is the survivor, but everybody else is dead.
Ric Flair, like him, Ric Flair, these are the exceptions to the rule.
But of course, Ric Flair's son died in his like 20s, so there you go. Right. There's the balance.
The last time
Hulk Hogan suing people, not uncommon. Let's remember, he has sued the. We know the whole Gawker thing, which, by the way, and this is a separate discussion, I think Hulk Hogan is a scumbag. I agree with the jury's verdict in this one, though.
Yeah, I kind of agree,
but
too.
But he sued the Laser Spine Institute. He has sued his ex-wife. You know, he has sued, apparently, Scott's cousin. So Hulk Hogan does two things well. You know, be a wrestling entertainment guy and suing people. So that's kind of his deal.
I was go ahead.
I was gonna say he's kind of the Donald Trump of. Well, he's just Donald Trump at this point.
Right. I was gonna say that too, except that he actually sues people because I think Donald largely just sort of says he will sue you.
Idle threats. Yeah, exactly.
Right. When he becomes president, I wonder if he knows he won't be able to do that. Like he's not gonna be given access to Twitter, really, and he's not gonna be allowed. Like as the president, you really just aren't allowed to sue people.
The problem is that I think he gets to make up his own rules as far as social media, and B, he has far more terrifying resources at his command if he's actually president.
That's true. So I guess
it's really terrifying to me.
Yeah, and me.
Okay. Anyway,
that's our political discussion for the day.
Yeah.
If this becomes a more darker reality, we'll go with it more later.
This will be an underground podcast. We have to send it out encrypted so that the monitors won't find us. Yeah.
I will quickly say the last time I think I remember watching wrestling in earnest was about the time Paul did. There were people at work that watched it, and I got back into it. And I think like a Rock versus Stone Cold match or something was probably like the last like headlining match that I was really interested in because I liked him, I liked The Rock, and I liked Mick Foley too. I thought they were a lot of fun and kind of creative to watch. So as an adult who sort of knew better with regards to the results, finally could appreciate some of the stuff that they were kind of doing. And so I watched that. So there you go. I think that filled 8 minutes.
Yeah, right? It did. We've hit the hour mark. So that was much more interesting than around the NFL because honestly, doing it around the NFL in March is kind of, I don't know, someone make up a joke here. Think about
blah,
that.
Blah, 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 blah. Right.
Yeah. So if you are listening to this podcast, thank you. We genuinely appreciate it, except Scott, as we established, who doesn't really care what you do on this. So we'll do our every podcast, what happens when you Google Buffalo Bills podcast on my computer. You have the John Murphy Show's got two hits, and then our buddies over at Bills and Beers, and then the Buffalo News podcast. And there we are, still on page one, still ahead of Sal Speak. So take that, Sal Majorana. We are still ahead of you. And we're ahead of Buffalo Rumblings, too. So, we thank you for listening, for downloading. Thank you, porn bots, for your contributions to keeping us at the top of the list. So with that in mind, you can follow me on Twitter, bbillsmny /Twitter. I am on there periodically, a little bit less so during the offseason, but you can expect me to be on during the draft. Scott will definitely be running Facebook, bbillsmny, .facebook.com, or /Facebook. I don't know. You can find us on Facebook.
Search Scott maybe next year. Yeah.
Yep. We have a hosted page, bbillsmny.wordpress.com. Nothing's going on there. Don't really bother to go there right now. We'll get back to that at some point in the future. Otherwise, you can interact with us. Don't email us because I think we check the Gmail account about annually. So, you know, you're better off sending us via Twitter or Facebook.
Yep.
Any other discussion points? Are we through here, gentlemen?
I think we're good. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep.
We'll see you before the draft, probably. People?
Yep, absolutely. Draft will be about 4 weeks away right now. We'll definitely.
And then after the draft, and then, yeah. And then another little break.
Then another little break, and then we'll start. Will it be season 5 that we're starting?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and then we'll be starting season 5.
Coming into it. Yeah.
Yeah. So as we wind down season 4, we thank you all for listening. We'll catch you guys again before the draft. In the meantime, I am Paul.
I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
See you all next time.
Good night.